SAE. And behind us is Mr. Spenning Ngobel, who is the CFO for Supported Employment Enterprises. Chairperson, with your approval, last week we did present the performance of the of Supported Employment Enterprises when we did the Department of Labour performance to this committee. And we thought it, if it carries your approval, that we'll focus on future plans more than look at the performance that we have reported on last week. We'll look at a few slides around performance to give you a sense of where the entity is coming from in the last 2 or 3 years, where the performance has moved to as an entity, and then focus on the plans for the entity going forward, if it favors your approval.
Is there any concerns on that, members? Where I'm seated, I see no problem. The indication by have is that you can take that route. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm then going to ask the CEO to take us through the presentation, and we'll start the presentation, refer to a few slides, and then go to the future plans. Mr. Mundango.
Thank you, CEO, Honorable Chairperson, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. As a starting point, the presentation, as the CEO has indicated, will deal with the more strategic issues with regards to the entity, an overview of the performance information with regards to employment opportunities, a market increase with regards to performance information in the entity. But more strategically, Honorable Chairperson, dealing with slides 24 and 25 towards the end, which basically goes to the nature of the challenges in the entity and the strategic visioning going forward with regards to the entity. If I may go to, so effectively I will deal with slide number one and then quickly deal with slide number five, then slide number seven, and then slide 24 and slide 25. If I may go to slide number one, Chairperson. Slide number one deals with employment opportunities in the entity, that the total complement as we stand with regards to factory employees, and there's a breakdown of the various provinces. We're standing at 966 employees in the entity. The entity's capacity originally is about 3,000 employees, and therefore there's available space for the entity to employ more persons with disabilities. That's with regards to slide number one. If I may proceed to slide number five. Slide number five provides a graphic presentation of performance information with regards to financial year 14-15, 16-17. You will realize that from 22% in 14-15, in 16-17, Chairperson, we're at 57%, which indicates a market improvement with regards to performance information in the entity. If I may proceed to the next slide, which is slide 24 and 25. With regards to point number one in slide 24. Point number one deals with the issues, the challenges that we're trying to address. With regards to the footprint, members will recall that we're situated in 7 of the 9 provinces, and there are 2 provinces, there are no factories. And for that reason, therefore, with regards to item number one, we intend developing the terms of reference by the end of February 2018 to conduct a feasibility study on the opening of 2 factories in both Mpumalanga and Limpopo. With regards to two, there are issues, there are legal problems that were identified as the Department of Labor, the DPSA, and the Treasury with regards to the current provision, legal provision of the entity, as contemplated in the Public Employment Services Act, chapter number 6. And therefore, what item number 2 seeks to do is to ensure that legal services provides the entity and the department with a comprehensive legal opinion that clarifies the status of the SEC as a trading entity, as opposed to the current provision in the Act, which confers to the entity the status of a government component, which is not a correct legal format of the entity. Secondly, with regards to bullet point number 2, anticipate the establishment of an advisory board and therefore clarify its functions. The third bullet point, clarify in the Act the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer, and including clarifying the powers thereof. Item 3 relates to the employment of persons with disabilities in the factories, that given the fact that the factories have got the capacity of about 3,000 employees in the past and currently have got about close to 1,000 employees, the intention is that in the next financial year, and in terms of the APP, we absorb about 200 persons in 2018 and another 250 in 2019, in line with the APP. That we will do in terms of recruiting persons with disabilities from special schools which we're currently visiting. With regards to item 4, as part of long-term sustainability of the factories, that's the nature of the challenge that we want to address, engage stakeholders through marketing and partnerships with various government departments during 2018-19, and to ensure that we increase the contracts that we have. In that process, enhance our product exhibitions through radio campaigns and the print media. We've concluded a contract with regards to the GECIS, with regards to radio campaigns and the print media. The next slide, item number 5, again relates to the competitive nature of the furniture and the textile industry. That's the challenge that we want to address, to modernize our factories through procurement of additional machinery and without displacing the current employees in the factories. And currently the project underway to modernize two of our factories that will ensure that we manufacture high-end products. Item number 6 is related to item number 5, the development of new products. Again, as a result of responding to the market needs, to develop new products that are more labor intensive but also meet requirements for various markets. Item number 7 deals with the nature of the employees that we have in the factories, to assist them with regards to their medical needs. In the past, the factories would have had a medical facility that existed. We are in the process of reopening medical clinics in all of our factories, staffed by nurses and doctors, and in collaboration with the compensation fund, because they currently have these facilities, not the doctors and nurses, and to do this on agreed intervals. Item number 8 deals with the utilization of spare capacity in the factories, that is ensuring that we employ more persons with disabilities and utilize the utilization of the existing spare capacity. We intend embarking on projects through the manufacturing of toilet papers, glass recycling projects, and collaboration with the Algerians with regards to the production and the development of medical assistive devices through a project funded by the Compensation Fund. Chairperson, that takes me to the end of the strategic challenges with regards to the SSC. I thank you and members of the committee.
Any addition? Thank you. That's the presentation. I'll now welcome clarification questions from members. I'm noting Honorable Bakram and Honorable Van Skalkwyk. Let's go in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the report from the department. It's greatly appreciated. I do want to make some general comments, and maybe you can answer them and put your input in, and also some more specific. Obviously, this is an area that we are desperate for more and more intervention from, not only the department, but our government. Our Minister of Labour tells us that the aim is to employ 3% of disability at the workplace. At the moment, I think the figures are telling us it's 1%, so we need to triple that. And I want to know how you're going to try and assist, not just in your factories, but to try and find people who have been trained in your factories to go into the private enterprise, because the reality is that's going to be the only sustainable way in which you're going to be able to run these factories properly. In other words, if you're going to triple the figures in South Africa, we need to place people in private enterprise. So that's the first issue. The second issue is the increase of sales and goods. Now, I don't see any effort being made, and maybe there is, but you can share this with us, about you approaching the not only government itself, but all the entities such as Eskom, SAA. I know both of them are bankrupt, but at least they're still buying goods. They still need labor-intensive goods, and they should be ordering it from you as opposed from private enterprise. And in fact, there should maybe be some sort of legislation saying that unless they can source it from you, then they have to source it. They'll have to prove that they can't source it from you. For instance, if they need furniture or anything like that, SAA, Eskom, I can go through all of them, and you should be forcing them to look to you, obviously on a competitive basis. I'm not looking, I'm a capitalist myself, and I'm not looking for them to pay higher prices from you than they could get from private enterprise. But I'd like to see if you, while you're looking to getting your lawyers advising you on changes to legislation, this is maybe something you can consider as well, and it probably would increase your sales and give you a healthy gross profit, which you've referred to at slide number 7. I want to go on to a third area. Let me just get there. Your interaction with civil society, such as Epilepsy South Africa, Deaf South Africa, the Association with Persons with Physical Disabilities. I can go through hundreds of them. I know I'm involved with Epilepsy, Deaf, and with APD. And the interaction that you have with them on a provincial basis is null. And I believe that there should be interaction. Not only do they have the people come to them because they're well known. Everyone knows about Epilepsy SA, and they all contact Epilepsy SA. Anyone that is at the workplace contacts them with troubles and whatever. Your interaction with them, not only to get people into your factories, because you've still got space, and they've got people, and it would be a healthy marriage, that, but also to actually help you and to help them train each other so that people can go into the workplace. And I'd like to hear, in terms of your future plans, which is so sadly lacking in that area. You've got nothing in your future plans about it, because that's so obvious. Wherever you go in the world, the interaction with supported enterprise and the private sector, who actually have been running it for 100 years, maybe you should be talking to them. And I think it would be good if you can do so. And like I said, to expand in terms of slide 24, to expand the current employment levels of people with disability, that's not just in your factories. I think the Minister of Labour is calling everyone to employ people with disabilities, and you are at the forefront, you're at the helm. You employ 1,000 people, after all, that could be helping out private enterprise on this. In terms of also slide 24, number bullet point 4, not bullet point number 4, to secure more contracts to enhance marketing and partnerships, and I make this point with every part of the Department of Labor, the current radio stations, the community radio stations, are desperate for content. You don't need to pay them. They're desperate for content. You can pick up the telephone, anyone in your department, any one of your 966 people, pick up the telephone and phone a local television station, a local radio station, a local newspaper, and say, we've got some content. We'd like someone to come and speak, or we'd like someone to write something or whatever. You don't need money for this. I mean, you've bought a campaign, a radio campaign and a print media, but in fact, you need to be a little bit of innovative, and they will grab it with open arms. I can give you 100 numbers tomorrow if you want to, and I'm sure you've got them. Well, the department certainly has, of all the local radio stations who are desperately looking for people to come and speak, and this is wonderful stuff. And this is like motherhood and apple pie, helping the disabled. So you really ought to be there. In terms of another point, and it's a bit of a passion of mine, employment equity. Employment equity makes it your responsibility as private enterprise to employ people with disabilities. And again, your future plans are not interacting with the equity inspectorate. And they should be going out there and checking to see how many people are in each factory that are disabled. How many people are deaf or blind or epilepsy or in wheelchairs or whatever. And you could be having that interaction with them, because again, you're at the forefront of that, and somehow the business community is not employing people with disabilities. And I think they would like to. They often say when we ask, they can't find people with disabilities. Well, you could be the marriage officer, and you could certainly find those people for them. I just want to go into a more specific area, and I strongly support on slide 24, your point 2, and the 3 bullet points there. Strongly support that, in that you should have it properly clarified as to your status as a trading entity. You should get VAT numbers, etc., etc., and that's a good thing. But I have a bit of a worry. Your advisory board and its functions, I can only urge and beg you to make sure that that advisory board and the outline of that advisory board is very carefully planned, that it's an independent body, that it's not a politically charged body. We've seen too much of that in the past, and how it goes awry. And I would ask you to have a look very carefully to make sure it's independent, and to make sure that independent board then appoints a CEO, and not a government appointment. And then carefully look at the powers of that CEO. We don't want big man CEOs, certainly not in an enterprise of this nature. If I may go on to slide 25, if my glasses read correct. To develop new products, it's point 6 on slide 25, develop new products that are labor intensive. As you know, for instance, institutions like Volkswagen have just put up a new factory, and they've made it, it's called jobless growth. They've got fantastic factories, they've put enormous money into it. It has been announced in Parliament itself, but in fact they're not employing anyone. They don't need to, they've got machinery. But what they do need, and Volkswagen in particular, and the whole car, they need someone, the labor-intensive part, in other words, the seats of the cars, etc., etc. And I'm not sure where they're sourcing that. And again, they've gone to big business to source it. They should be looking to you for seat covers, for instance. They're putting out, I don't know, 100,000 cars a year. Who's doing all the seat covers? And again, those are labor-intensive issues that they don't want. They don't want to employ anyone. You can, and it's quite a simple task to put together a seat cover. It doesn't have to be all that fancy either. Point number seven, to reopen the medical clinics. Now, that's a fantastic idea. It did used to work. It was done on a small scale, and it used to work in the past. Because people, for instance, in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, you have a certain amount of sick leave days per year, employees have. And they use that sick leave to go and fetch their epilepsy medicine once a month from the clinics. Now, you could offer that as a service. I know there's a gentleman in Khayelitsha, he opened a small business in Khayelitsha with a bicycle, where he went to fetch people's medication from the clinics, and so that they didn't miss a day of work. Now, they could, you could have your clinics, you could actually make money from it, and do a deal with the various pharmaceutical companies, where people in factories nearby to you could collect their medication from you. And there's a dying need for it. Absolute need for this, where people don't actually waste all their sick leave going to fetch their medication and costing them money for travel, etc. So I'm very strongly in support of reopening the medical clinics and not only offering it as a service to your own enterprise, but maybe to private. It would be fantastic, because you'll have a nurse and you'll probably have a doctor as well. And it's fantastic. You know that there's a shortage of nurses and doctors. And the clinics, when you get into a queue, you can sit there the whole day and people take off the whole day. Bad for the economy and bad for productivity in South Africa altogether. I wanted to talk about another issue, and I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but it's still a bit of a passion of mine and I want to get it off my chest. But I went on a tour in Germany to have a start to look at their supported employment enterprises there, and also to have a look at the dual education system that they have in Germany. And they have, as part of their dual education system, and maybe for people from the department, I don't know, maybe someone should go and study that, or just go for a week to have a look. I would strongly suggest that you find a budget for that. Then have a look, because in their supported employment enterprises, they bring school kids in that have disabilities and actually train them to go into the marketplace while they're at school. So they get them one day a week. And it's a fantastic system. It's working, because those kids at the age of 17, 18 leave. They're in wheelchairs or they're disabled in some way or other. They leave school. Not only have they got their schooling, but they've now got the practical training to go straight into a factory. And it might be something in terms of your future plans that you could look at. I know that you're very busy, but you could spare 7 days to go to Germany just to have a look at their systems. It's called the dual education system, and the German Department of Labor are very keen for people to come. They'll probably sponsor you if you are willing to go and have a look at it. Private enterprise would be incredibly happy if someone could do that and try and, because you'd have to speak to our Department of Education, who are pretty difficult people, but to try and get people to allow you to have school kids come to your factories for study purposes. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to go on a rave.
Thank you. Honourable Kalkwe, noted.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Bagram had a mouthful to say, so there's very little left for the rest of us, but I'll try, Chairperson. When looking at slide 5, Chairperson, of the presentation, I really want to welcome the presentation that's been made by the department. When looking at slide 5, it's showing the annual performance comparisons for the past 3 years. And I note the slight improvement on a yearly basis, but I need some refreshment in terms of the performance of the first quarter of this year, just to see in terms of how on par are they, and do they foresee to have a better performance at the end of this financial year, or can we expect relatively below 60% of achievement again during at the end of this financial year. When I move further on to slide 9, Chairperson, I see the performance indicators for 2016-17 in terms of the percentage increase of the gross profit. And then when I look at the actual achievement for 2015-16 and also for 2016-17, the actual performance, I see that they didn't achieve that, and by a huge margin. So my question in this regard would be, do they think that the targets that they've set is relatively real? Do you think that you will be, it's achievable? Because it won't help that you set targets and you know very well that it's not achievable. Maybe instead of setting that kind of targets, you can lower the targets so that you know that it might be in the range of being achievable. So if I can get clarification on that one. When I go further on, Chairperson, I'd like to speak to slide 24. And when I speak to that, I'm specifically looking at point three, when they speak about the expansion of the current employment levels. They are mentioning the projected expansion of 2018 as well as 2019 by those numbers, but my concern is what is currently happening this financial year. What is the current vacancy rate and how much did you employ during this financial year, and how much do you still plan to employ by the end of the financial year? On slide 25, Chairperson, I welcome also the reopening of the medical clinics and take note of the fact that they say that they're going to make use of the doctors and nurses and the compensation fund to assist them. So when we look at the current state of the affairs as being presented or mentioned by Honorable Bagram, I need to know if you that approach would be sustainable in the long run, taking into account that it would be most probably needing permanent staff there. And do you have any provision that you've made in terms of the long-term effect of employing people permanently into those positions to have a permanent service? Because currently you're only mentioning about regular intervals. How regular do you plan to use them? Or is it still in a planning phase in terms of that? And what led to the actually closing down of those clinics? So maybe we can do some kind of analysis on making sure that we don't, that you don't repeat the same mistakes that led to the closure of the those medical clinics. And what do you have in the absence of using, making use of the compensation fund staff, do you have resources available to do that in-house service situation or service to be a permanent thing? I think I pause there, Chairperson, for now.
Thank you. Honorable Khawla. Noted, Honorable Korai.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome you as the Chairperson of the Committee and further welcome the presentation. Chair, mine is on slide 1. I'm not sure if it is possible for us to get the actual demographics in terms of, I see the numbers, CEO. But one is interested in the detail in terms of demographics of our own transformation agenda. You see, to check who are these people, what type of people are, how many young people there, how many women, and obviously how many disabled people. You see, I think it's key for us to know. It's very key. The other thing, obviously, the numbers are not the same. But one is curious on what could be the possible factors that influence numbers in each province. We understand that you are dealing with different population dynamics. But if those things can be put clear so that you are able to make our own assessment, you see, you'll understand, obviously, Gauteng will have more people, as it is the case here. But I think it's important for us to know, the committee to lift up the factors that influence the numbers. I'm raising this point of demographics also in conjunction with slide number 20. I see it talks about the achieved targets of disability of 47 people. And my curiosity is that the types of jobs, you see, are we having permanent jobs there? You see, before we can say that we have achieved the target, because there's a tendency of contracting people for a week just to meet the targets, and then after that, those people do not have a job, yet the report goes and says that there's an achievement. So it's important for us to know what type of jobs are those. I also want to have a bite with slide 24, which I think is an important slide in the presentation. With item number 2, I don't necessarily have a fundamental problem, but I want to get an understanding, because it talks about future plans, talks about the terms of reference and also the establishment of the board. Is there, perhaps, if you can be taken to confidence, is there a possible projection to elevate the SEE into an entity rather than being a sub-entity? You see, so that we know what we're dealing with here. You see, is it part of the politics of labor to see how do we perhaps for this entity or this sub-entity to find better expression? If the projection seeks to say that perhaps we must elevate it to have the same status as other entities of the department. You see, I think it's very important for us to know that. And then with regard to slide 3, with item number 3, I just want to check, you see, has the SEE considered the contract of the possibility of contracting community-based cooperatives, NGOs, as part of ensuring that you've got broader participation, and because I believe that it will be consistent to the mandate, you see, of SEE, you see. So just to check if part of that expansion of contract, does it seek to also consider the fact that it will be important to have NGOs, cooperatives. Obviously, there are different cooperatives in our committees, some constituted by women, in terms of support so that they find expression as well. You see, if you can get that. Now, the item number 4, which is slide 25, item number 5 and item number 6, I'm interested. It talks about to modernize factories, you see, and also it talks about additional machinery without displacing workers. And in my view, when you talk about modernization, you refer to introduction of things that makes work more efficient, such as technology, such as mechanization, you see. And in my view, that there is a strong argument that the introduction of technology and mechanization has got a direct effect of displacing workers. So the presentation seeks to say that we don't want to displace workers. We don't want to disrupt the current arrangement of employed workers. But there is evidence in a number of factories that the more you introduce technology and mechanization, it leads to the displacement of workers. And how are they envisaging? You see, and the last point I want to end in is that the development of new products which will meet the various, which are labor intensive and meet the requirements of various markets. See, and I'm curious, what do you have in mind? What do you have in mind in terms of the products? Because on the other hand, you talk about introduction of products that are labor intensive. Whilst on the previous item you talk about modernizing factories, which I have argued that to me it means you are looking at ways of introducing technological advancement, mechanization, which I argue that it has got a direct effect in terms of disruption of labor, displacement of workers. You see. So I'm not sure, Chair. Yeah, I just want to land there. I want to land there, but I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. Because now this is my second meeting to be a part of the Labour family. I wanted to make as a recommendation is in future, if the presenters they can assist me specifically on these abbreviations. I always start to read, and it's difficult sometimes to read and see what is CEE, what is ADC, what is ECE, what is ES Act, CF, those things. And because I'm new here, to me they make my work very difficult. If I can recommend that at least you must have the index that deals with those abbreviations so that I can go along with you in this committee. I love the committee now. Thanks.
Apologies for not coming into your defense. That is a fair request. The last batch of questions to say, go back to slide 2, where you are reflecting the provinces where you have factors. But if you go to slide 24, can you open slide 24, because I want to point you to your first item there. You are saying that you are still going to issue terms of reference by end of February and conduct feasibility study. And if you say two new factories, my assumption is that one in Mpumalanga and one in Limpopo. But you have not given yourself a time frame to say for how long is this gonna take place, for gonna continue. Because with us as a committee, our interest is on when are you opening, especially considering that the two provinces that do not have factories are provinces where we know, in Mpumalanga, for instance, they are dominated by farm workers. In Limpopo, it's more of a rural province than other. So just come to us to say when. We understand the process that you are embarking on. Again, in slide 5, you know, I want to make an example with my other life. I was a teacher. If you are unable to do everything for a school, and when you are reduced to a classroom and you perform better, is that indicating that you are a good performer? Because you are saying in slide 5 you have reduced targets, and now that you have reduced targets, you are performing well. Then when you respond to that, link it with what Honorable Fanskavik has asked in terms of the target, because her perspective is to say, are you not biting a big chunk which becomes cumbersome for you to meet your deadlines? Then in slide 23, your graph there, there's a bar there where you are indicating the gross loss. To what do you attribute the gross loss? Those are the few. It's a big package that we have been given by members, but cruise through. Oh, Honorable America, apologies. I've noted your hand. Let's give Honorable America, then we'll come back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two questions that I have, and I think that the other members have ventilated much of the matters that was of concern to me as well. On slide 7, it's a comparative analysis of quarters 1 to 4 per strategic objectives. Doesn't make sense. There's probably a mistake there somewhere. Being the second row, effective and efficient financial management and governance. I don't know if it is the same number. It's on my page 4, it's 2, 4, slide 7. It's two slides after that one, yeah. So the second row is that effective and efficient management of finances and governance. That target achieved 67%, and all the targets were achieved. I mean, that's a mistake. I don't know what it's supposed to mean. And then I would like to move on to this page. Slide 16, that is the statement of financial performance for year 16 and 17 financial year. Here we go. If one look at other revenue, there we have interest earned external investment. Now we don't have the benefits of the notes, note 5.1. If one look at the comparative sort of figures presented. It's a huge difference from the previous financial year to this financial year, or to March 2017. Could an explanation be provided as to how come that enormous difference in terms of interest earned? And further down on the same slide, we look at allowances for debt impairment and impairment losses. Again, it's note 14, and we don't have the benefit of the notes. If you look at the comparative figures, I mean, it's almost over 300% difference, if not more. Perhaps just some clarity on that. Then I concur with what my colleague has stated regarding the future plans of the SEE. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So,
Chairperson, thank you. There are quite a lot of questions, and if you will allow, I'm going to ask the DDG, Mr. Muratova, to deal with the strategic questions of strategic nature, those referring to the particularly point 2 on page 24, as well as the issue of training people to going into private enterprises and so on. Then I will, after that, ask the CFO if he will respond, please, to the questions regarding the gross profit and the loss, the questions raised by Honourable America now, as well as also the performance of quarter 1 and quarter 2 for this year, if you have that, and then leave all the other operational questions to the CEO to answer. So I'll ask that the DDG starts and take us in now. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Congratulations once more. I wanted to quote from the Act, especially the reason for SEE or supported employment enterprises, so that I can clarify the question of persons with disabilities. The Act, in defining the kind of people we are employing in the factories, was very specific to say that, and this is the main focus of the supported employment enterprise factories, to say it includes persons who have long-term physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairment, which in interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on equal basis with others. So I think there's an acknowledgement, if we go to the Employment Equity Act, that other people with disabilities must be integrated in the normal formal employment, which is what we continue to encourage. And that is why we also moved away from calling these factories sheltered, because people with disabilities were feeling offended that they don't participate in sheltered or protected employment. It must be employment that is supported, because people with disabilities need to be integrated in informal employment. And I agree completely with Honorable Background that the 3% that is employed in the labor market, or the target that we have set, is not being achieved. We constantly, in terms of the employment equity reports of government, review this issue, and the inspectors in doing the employment equity report are focusing on this area very well to make sure that the employment equity reports and the targets that are set by various companies do meet this achievement. However, I think honorable members know that the employment equity report released by the Employment Standard Commission has not been that good, not only in terms of people with disability, but also in terms of transformation in other areas. I also want to highlight the fact that, honorable members, apart from the supported employment enterprises, as the department, we also have a separate program that funds organizations of people or persons with disabilities to assist us in the placement of people with that is in the recruitment and placement of people in employment, and that includes your South African National Council for the Blind and so on, that continue to be funded. We also provide subsidies to organizations that employ the deaf and the blind. We offer a gross subsidy of 600 rand. It's not sufficient, but where such organizations do employ, and the traditional ones that benefited for years are going to be replaced as from next year, and the new terms of reference will be published before end of November, so that we comply with Treasury requirements that we get new partners. I welcome the idea of the suggestion, and will depend on honorable members. I think honorable Bagrin, this issue of preferential procurement, we had it previously. We had big fights with Treasury, and the reasons why, under the old dispensations, these factories employed 3,000 plus was because it was mandatory for government departments to first and foremost procure from these factories. And that procurement status, we all know it was removed. However, the positive thing that we have achieved with Treasury is that they've allowed us to charge 50% upfront from all departments, so that we deal with the problem of the preferential procurement, because we also had challenges where we couldn't deliver in some cases, and to mitigate that, we were given that. And we will continue to explore possibilities, and we continue to talk to big parastatals to procure from factories such as ours. When we have open day events, we do invite them so that they can see the kind of furniture, equipment that we produce for them to can develop interest and to buy from us. And I think the issue around the interaction with organizations of people with disabilities, I must say that we do that. In fact, what we have been doing, like I said, we fund this organization. We will also look into them assisting on the recruitment to FEE over and above the visiting to colleges. There was a question of utilization of the media, which we welcome, and I'm sure both the DG, in fact, has asked us to develop an integrated communication strategy that also includes all entities of the department so that we can convey a coherent message on all the things that we do. The issues around the amendment of the Act, I think the bill will come to Parliament. Obviously, you put it to scrutiny on the composition of the board, its functions, and its powers. I think some of the things were identified after lengthy discussions, after looking at King 4 reports, that we need to be consistent with some of those developments. There was an issue around exploring relations with big companies like VW, and I think when we visited, incidentally, Honorable Bertram, the Bonn factory in Germany, we managed to understand how big factories, in fact, also Samsung, also produces a lot of small components. Because there's laborious work in putting together the tablets, the cell phones, etc., the large chunk of that work is given to organizations of people with disability because they have to do manual assembly sitting down without additional strain. So those are the kind of things that we are also looking at. Because it doesn't mean that high tech equals complete displacement. There are the equipment that we continue to use, even though a large component of things that goes to our tablets and all that are manufactured by high-tech machines, the assembly is still manual, and in some cases they employ. That is why big countries like China, even with a population of 1.4 billion high-tech, they still have large factories that employ people that continue to do a lot of manual work in the assembly of some of these things. The issue around the medical clinics, I think the closure historically had to do with the loss of revenue and the dissatisfaction that the nurses that we employed were having and the decline in the numbers of people in the factories. We also lost quite a lot of psychologists. The support from Treasury was also drastically reduced. And now, with some of the income that we are making, and in the initial stages, the compensation fund, for the benefit of honorable members, and for your information, is that it employs a lot of nurses to do follow-up to people who are injured, regular assessments and all that. And we also employ doctors. The challenge that we are sitting with is that for them to maintain their registration, they have to do additional work elsewhere. Now, to stop the moonlighting, we are saying as a start, they will use the clinics and attending to workers in the SEE, firstly to deal with the occupational health and safety issues, we have to comply, but also to make sure that those people are regularly assessed. We identify that problem, and the doctors in the FEE have also a compensation fund, have also indicated that they will be willing to assist. Of course, in the long term, and in discussion with Treasury, and the growing, the growth in the numbers in the factories, we will have to look at a long-term sustainable strategy that will make sure that at least every factory has a full-time nurse or two, and that on a weekly basis, one doctor can always make a turn. Because we have two types of staff in the factories. There are disability workers that are employed in terms of the basic conditions of employment, and the support staff. Now, people like the CEO are Department of Labor staff that have been seconded to manage the factories. Those are covered in terms of medical aid and etc. But the other staff are not. And to try and bridge the gap, if we open medical aid, it was going to take a big chunk of their income that we are giving to them. Remember when we worked on the income of people working in the factories, we looked at what social development gives, we looked at other benefits. And currently, even though it's not enough, we are paying them almost four times what an ordinary social grant would normally give. And that is why those people are keen to wake up and go to work on a regular basis. I think on the expansion in terms of the current levels, I think our view at a strategic level and as the department, we have always said we needed to expand the employment of people with disabilities. I think that the question of going to other factories, but also to utilize the spare capacity, and also to collaborate with the Department of Environmental Affairs. If we get this process right, not only will we employ people with disabilities, but it will open up an opportunity to also look in terms of the youth sector, so that we can use the massive infrastructure that we have. In fact, the Eastern Cape government and the Northwest came to us to say we have had factories that were built under the old TBVC state. Currently, most of them are sitting idle. And they are saying if we sell them products, we need to partner with them and make sure that we reopen some of those old factories that are rusty, and see how best we can also assist in terms of employment creation. Thank you, CEO.
Thank you, CFO.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Chairperson, I'd like to respond to three questions. The first one being the gross profit target and the question around the gross loss. What do we attribute the gross loss to? And I'm also going to respond to the question on the spike over the two comparison years, the 2016 financial year as well as the 2017 financial year, in terms of other revenue as well as the allowance for debt impairment and impairment losses. And lastly, I will respond to the quarter one as well as quarter two performance information question that was raised. I'll start with a question around the gross profit target that was not met, Chairperson, as well as what we attribute our gross loss to. But maybe, Chairperson, to preface my response to that, I'd like to highlight the funding model of the entity as well as the mandate of the entity. Supported Employment Enterprises' mandate is to create employment for persons with disabilities, and the entity is funded for this mandate. And the funding is reflected in our statement of financial performance as revenue from non-exchange transactions, which is 138 million. That's the funding that the entity receives for the employment that it creates. Now, the next question is, where is the employment being costed that the entity creates? It's reflected on the line in our statement of financial performance, the line that says cost of sales, which is the 119 million, if you look at the figures for 31 March 2017. So our mandate is, in terms of accounting, is reported as cost of sales. So our challenge, if you look at our mandate as well as the business model of the entity, is that we need to create employment as well as generate revenues internally. And that's the main reason why we have not been able to report a gross profit with regards to our comparison between our sales generated internally as well as the cost of sales that we generate or the employment that we create. So the primary issue there is not having enough contracts in place that will ensure that the people that we employ, that we pay on a monthly basis, have got enough work that they will do every month. That will result in us generating more revenue at the end of the financial year when we report and report a gross profit. So as part of our strategic planning efforts, there is a strong focus in developing growth strategies that would assist the entity in generating more revenues. So there were inputs that were made with regards to penetrating state-owned companies like Eskom and SAA. We have identified that opportunity as well, and we welcome that the committee is also highlighting that to us. That's the market that we are looking into getting into in terms of our efforts to increase revenues. So that's the answer with regards to the gross profit target that was not met. We do not have enough revenue, hence the CEO has highlighted that we need to be increasing contracts that we have in order for us to generate more revenues. The question on the spike over the two financial years on other income. Firstly, let me apologize, Chairperson. The financial statements that we presented here are condensed financial statements. It's not the full set of financial statements, hence the reference to notes which are not included as part of the presentation. But the full set of financial statements could be presented when the opportunity is given or could be provided. They're on the annual report. Oh, okay. It's part of the annual report of the Department of Labor, the full financial statements are there. But the reason for the spike is on the interest. We do have a bank that the entity holds where we bank the funding that we receive from National Treasury as well as the revenue that we generate internally. And as part of that account, we've got a call account that generates interest if we've got a favorable balance in the account. Now, in the 31 March 2016 financial year, our bank balance was not at the level that it was as at the end of 31 March 2017 due to the prepayment that we received in one of our contracts from our customers who paid upfront, and we were able to earn more interest in that in the year 31 March 2017. So it's primarily due to having a higher than normal bank balance due to a prepayment that was received by the entity on a contract that it secured during that financial year. The spike on allowance for debt impairment and impairment losses is an accounting entry, Chairperson, that we as accountants do a provision of. And this is mainly due to an increase in doubtful debts that were not provided for in the previous financial years. We were trying to correct a number of prior period mistakes or misstatements that were in the entity, and we have accounted correctly for doubtful debts that were never accounted for correctly. But going forward, we no longer have that much of a challenge with regards to doubtful debts due to the introduction of the 50% deposit that we require from our customers. So that was introduced in order to eliminate having a situation of debtors that are not paying on time or that are doubtful in nature. So that's the reason for the spikes on the two. With regards to quarter one and quarter two performance information, Chairperson, the quarter one performance information was presented last week and it's part of this presentation. I'm just going to give percentages perhaps in terms of what was achieved. In quarter one, we've achieved performance of 40%. Quarter two, we have not presented that information, but just to get a feel, we are sitting at 60% achievement in terms of performance information. And I'm sure when we come back to present our quarter two performance, we will provide more details on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you. Can I just respond to slide 7, 67%, Mr. America? Yeah, indeed, it's a mistake. We'll correct that. Thank you for that. I also take the point of the acronyms that we use. It's a very bad illness the Department of Labor has, to use abbreviations and acronyms, and I'll make sure that we don't do that, or at least provide an index. Thank you for that. Can I allow the CEO then to answer the questions on the operational issues? that are still remaining. Thank you.
Chairperson, one of the questions relates to modernization. You could have, and this has been tested, labor-intensive production processes coexisting with capital-intensive production processes that you could have. One of our factories in Johannesburg, in the Springfield factory, has been refurbished. Part of what we want to do in that factory is to manufacture what we define as office and home furniture in that factory. Refurbished by Public Works, we intend installing high-end equipment that will manufacture high-end office and home furniture in that factory, in one section of the factory. In another section of the factory, we will manufacture what we define in our own context, our traditional products, your school furniture, etc., etc., etc. So you'd have, you could have the coexistence of both in one environment, labor-intensive production processes. On the other hand, labor-intensive production processes. We'll do that, Honorable Khawula. The second question related to the relationship with non-governmental organizations. Part of what we envisage to do as management is to have collaborative agreements with non-governmental organizations where we could source as part of our development strategy. Some of the things that we do in the factories, your basic functions such as cleaning, etc., etc., products that could be sourced from non-governmental organizations. The intention is to develop a policy that says what is the kind of relationship that the factories could develop with non-governmental organizations. But over and above that, the factories cannot, at this moment, create substantial employment in the facilities. To the extent that we can be able to collaborate with non-governmental organizations, for an example, with regards to logistics, with regards to the assembly of school furniture, etc., etc., those who perform that function. It is imperative that we establish that kind of relationship with them. So part of what we've got to do as the entity is to develop a policy that says NGOs in the same space, production, various services, etc., etc., what kind of relationship must we develop with them, and including cooperatives. So management is currently in the process of developing a policy that responds to that challenge. The third question relates to the kind of jobs that we create in the entity. Currently, the 900, close to 1,000 employees are permanent employees in the factories, permanent. There are temporary employees in instances where on any given particular project, we'll have to find assemblers for school furniture, find transportation, etc., etc. It's in that context that you would have temporary employment with regards to the assembling of school furniture, etc., etc., etc. The question that Honorable Khawula raised related to the status of the entity, is it a sub-entity? Given the current legal challenges that the DGG, Mr. Morotoba, elaborated upon in this committee. Currently, we still report in the department to the Public Employment Services Branch. Once we've resolved the challenges regarding the legal status, the entity would have an advisory board, and it would operate in the very same manner as your productivity essay and reports to the department and the minister, once we've resolved all of these legal challenges that have been raised by the DBSA, the National Treasury, etc. Once it has its advisory board, it will report, the CEO will report to the advisory board. The advisory board in turn, the CEO reports directly to the minister. So the process will resolve those issues. With regards to the time frames for the establishment of the factories in both Mpumalanga and Limpopo, allow us, Chairperson, to conclude the terms of reference with regards to that process, and in the next, the reporting phase, table a detailed report with regards to when the factories will be established. But I must make this undertaking that we now sound like a broken record, because this has been a matter on the table, if I can't recall, I don't know on how many occasions. The sooner we come with a concrete, detailed proposal that says these are the terms of reference, this is what we envisage doing, this is what we intend commissioning the two factories in the provinces, the better. Allow us in the next meeting when we do a reporting to provide a detailed report that says we envisage commissioning the first two of the factories in both provinces by the state. The last question relates to statistics, employment statistics, with regards to demographics in the factories. There's a combination of two aspects related to that question, the past and the present. We're trying to address the past in the factories, in the present. And how we intend to address the past in the present is to ensure that with regards to employment in the factories, with regards to demographics, be it gender or race, we seek to address the past and the present. Are we doing enough? Yes, we're trying. There are factories, Chairperson, where we would not be very comfortable as management to say that we have not been able and adequately to address the racial demographics. I'm being honest. Precisely because we can only be able to do that if there's additional work and we increase employment in the factories, because the status, the legal status of the factory, in fact, is already inherited. Factories can't retrench. They can only be able to displace existing employees through natural attrition. So even if you were attempting to address racial and gender demographics, you've got to wait for employees to be displaced in the factories through natural attrition. But however, as we speak, there's an attempt by management to ensure that in all of our factories, the racial and gender demographics are addressed. That's part of the strategy. We have not been able to achieve it as we would have wanted to, but we're trying our level best. I thank you, Chairperson.
Any follow-up? Oh, okay.
The breakdown with regards to each and every factory can be provided, Chairperson, as soon as possible. That provides the demographics in the nine factories. It can be provided to your office, to the Secretariat of your office, Chairperson. Thank you.
So, Chairperson, I wanted to say there were quite a lot of comments made with advice, which we will take from the members. So I think we've dealt with all the questions that were raised, Chairperson. Thank you.
Are there any follow-up questions, members? Somebody seems not to be satisfied with the responses of the former GS. Honorable Khawula.
Chair, I'm comfortable with the response. You see, but I guess the point probably will rest squarely entirely to the department. You see, in terms of when we talk about the transformative demographics, I think it is important to get the sense of commitment. I hear the point that the CEO is raising in terms of the legacy representation, the current ones. That's a fair comment. But I guess what is key for us as members of parliament is to get a sense of commitment in terms of your succession plans and everything. You see, obviously, you rely on that through your inspectorate services of the department. You see, I think that's what basically I wanted to find to check. Obviously, on the CEO in terms of the entity that is representing, but also just a reflection from the DDG. Otherwise, I'm comfortable with the response. Thanks, Chair.
Any response?
Chairperson, if I can respond for both the entity as well as the Department of Labour. The Department of Labour is fully committed to correcting the demographics, whichever way we want to make a permutation of those, as well as with SEE. With SEE, the recruitment drive currently taking place is fully committed to correcting the demographics so that we have these factories to be representative. It is what Mr. Ndwangu has said. It's a process, but with the posts that we currently have and filling, it's fully representative of the demographics of the country. The same with the Department of Labour as a whole, as an employer. We are fully committed because we are mandated to enforce that legislation, and we would want to do it ourselves. We can't expect others to do it if we don't do it.
In light of no other hand being raised, I think we've come to the end of the presentation by the department or the entity. Thank you very much for your presentation and your response to questions. At this stage, I propose 3 minutes break so as to allow the department to go and do work, because we don't want to keep them here. We always want outcomes, so that after the 3 minutes we can proceed with our work. Thank you, members.
No. I'm in charge of my
Can we reconvene, members? members, the next agenda item is consideration of draft minutes of the 18th of October. Zolani is indicating upfront that he made a mistake in the copies sent to us in terms of capturing the name of the chair. So he's indicating he's since picked that up and corrected it in the signed minutes. It's not going to be that name. Anyone who moves for adoption, Honorable Bagram, seconded by Honorable Korai, we are done with the minutes. That then takes us to the next item, which is correspondence. Members, a day after our meeting last week, a day or two, I can't remember. When was the last meeting today? What was it? It was the 18th. But I didn't receive it before the meeting. I received correspondence from the Office of the Deputy Speaker. If you remember, on the 27th, COSATU had a march across all provinces. So the Office of the Deputy Speaker has directed us as a committee to deal with the items, with an item as captured on page 6 of the memorandum, where we are talking of banning of labor brokers. I could not respond as an individual to this because it is directed to the committee. It's on that basis that we are bringing it to the committee. If you remember, it's two issues here, it's the banning of labor brokers as well as the issue of outsourcing. So as a committee, those are the two issues that we have to deal with in the memorandum so that Parliament can have a comprehensive response to the memorandum of COSATU. I just want to table it. Yes, on the side of the chair, I have a proposal, but I want to give an opportunity to members first to voice their views. I see the hand of Honorable Bagram, Honorable Khawula, Honorable Fanskavik. Thank you.
May I go ahead, Madam Chair? Thank you, Madam Chair. I would suggest, and I've just seen this now, I haven't had my eyes on it before, and I've scanned through it, I have some serious objections to it. I think it's at this juncture that myself and Honorable Khawula might have some real problems with each other, but we promise not to punish each other. I would like to have the opportunity to resort to an answer in writing to the committee, if we may use our committee staff and let them receive all this and then table all the responses. If you're not happy and the committee's not happy about that at a later stage, I'm happy to answer now, but I'd like to address you, and it'll take me an hour or so to address you as to why we can't ban outsourcing and labor broking, and why it would mean a change to the Constitution. But I'm happy to address you if you have the time on that. I have prepared my mind to it in the past, but I think I could probably spend a lot less time with the committee if I committed it to writing. And then people can choose to read it or not. If I'm talking, then unfortunately they can't choose to leave. So it's a real problem. But I have an enormous problem with it. There seems to be other issues raised in the letter as well, other than the 2 points. Sorry about that. There seems to be other issues raised, which I'm not so unhappy about, in this letter, if you have a look, other than the two that you spoke about. They also talk about the plight of the Guptas. They talk about monies that must be recovered. Those things are pretty important. and maybe not really within the mandate of this committee. And maybe what you're looking at, Madam Chair, is the things that are within the mandate of this committee, and not to answer all the other issues about the public protector's recommendation, etc. If that's the case, then I fully understand why you're saying that these are the only two issues that we have to deal with. We can't ignore some of the things that they put in the letter, which I, in fact, agree with. Probably 50% of their letter I do agree with. But that's my point really is that maybe we should go away, think about it, maybe even get mandates from our parties, because I'm not so sure that the parties have had a look at this as well, and maybe you need to put it before a caucus. For that, a lot of my views are personal views, and maybe my caucus might not agree with me. But thank you for listening to me on that.
Before I give Honorable Khawula, I need to clarify something. This one is the memorandum from COSATU, but in the letter written to me by the Speaker, we are directed to the two issues, which is labor broking and outsourcing. Honorable Khawula.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for clarifying Honorable Bahim on that one. It's very important. But I think
there goes the two of you again.
Just to pass on it, I think the importance of the one that refers to the issue that the need to step capture, I think it's more relevant to us on the role of companies in terms of their influence, in particular to government dealings. You see, I think that's where it makes more sense for the speaker to refer the one of labor brokering and outsourcing. And I want to add to that, the matter is coming back as an express, because when you pass laws, you want to address some sensitive issues that are in the public discourse. And I think most recently, even before my time, the PC had deliberated on issues of labor regulation, on the regulation of labor, which have found expression in the legislative framework of labor as a result of the deliberation of this committee. But I think the reason why the point is coming back, it means the laws that we have passed as this committee, they have actually not addressed the deep-seated issues that are finding expression in the society. You see, Honorable Bahim is raising an important point that perhaps could have been the consideration that some of the issues that could not be addressed were because of their direct implications to our own constitution. But I think the speaker is bringing this matter so that we can give our own perspective, so that if that perspective then warrants a possibility of the constitutional amendment to ensure that you give expression of resolving the impasse in the society around these matters, so be it. It's the role of the portfolio committee to do that. And I think, Speaker, we must, Chairperson, we must agree as a committee. We must agree as a committee that the issue of labor brokering and outsourcing, it remains a sensitive issue that this portfolio committee must provide direction to the society and also Parliament to assist Parliament to respond to this matter. The reality, we are living with it. And some of our own oversight, they have proven that the reality is that despite the fact that we have passed laws that relate to regulation of labor brokers, we have still not addressed the primary issues that affect our own society with regard to labor brokering. And COSATU being the major stakeholder amongst workers, for it to bring the matter to Parliament, it indicates and also it demonstrates that indeed we have just crept upon the surface. So I'm saying, Speaker, let us respond to the Deputy Speaker and say that as this Parliament, as this committee, we welcome it and we are therefore committing to look into the matter. And in looking to the matter, we hope that we'll find each other. And where there will be implications that relate to constitution, we'll make such recommendations so that Parliament advise us. You see, so we know very well the perspective of Honorable Bagley. Don't worry, we'll convince him. You see, but I think let's welcome this opportunity to reopen the matter of labor brokers and outsourcing and come to the logical conclusion, which will ultimately lead to the total ban of labor brokers and outsourcing. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Franz Gaffrey.
Thank you, Chair. I think on a lighter note, you are really fortunate to be promoted two times in one day. But, Chairperson, I also share the same sentiments in terms of the issue at hand. My proposal would be, Chairperson, that seeing that it's the first time that we also have the opportunity to look at this memorandum and especially the letter that's been addressed to the Portfolio Committee, I would therefore request that the Office of the Chairperson should send a request on behalf of the committee to the Department of Labor to respond also to the issues, and that we've been afforded the opportunity to go back as members of different political parties and discuss it and get mandates from our parties and then come back, reschedule it on the program, and then come back and have a comprehensive discussion around the matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Begram.
Thank you. I'm pleased that for all the things I'm still able to be convinced. I'm an old dog, and it's difficult to teach an old dog new tricks. But I do want to say that I agree with everyone on various points. One, that we go away and think about it. In parenthesis, I say let's put this on our agenda for August 2019, because that's a good date. But what I'm happy to do is if we could get this by email, if it could be emailed to us, so that we could then in turn email others for input, and then to come back on that, but I'd need a little bit of time for it. Thank you.
Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if you want to look at the paragraph here and what it seeks to achieve, it wants to instruct us to effect changes to the labor legislation to ultimately ban labor broking and outsourcing. Now, we have, you know, in the last year we passed amendments to legislation that address some of these issues. Now, COSATU represents under a million members. They cannot simply just present us with a memorandum and instruct us how to effect changes to labor legislation. This needs a more comprehensive response because it goes to the heart of economic growth. Because it will have implications, it is for our economy. And we need to have an integrated response to this, you know, with the Department of Trade and Industry and perhaps with the Department of Finance, so that we cannot simply just, you know, because we received a memorandum out of frustration with the inability of state organizations to act against state capture, and just any doubt to add to it, banning of outsourcing and labor broking, and then we have to act upon it. I would agree with Honorable Van Skalkwyk that perhaps we should refer to the Department of Labor and get the input on it and take it from there. And I don't even want to take it to my caucus because I don't think it is necessary that we need to take it to our caucus at this stage. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honorable Van Skalkwyk.
Thank you, Chair. There's a proposal that has been made by Honorable Bagram in terms of when this matter should be scheduled. I want to oppose that proposal formally and say that we need to deal with the matter on our program, if times allow, before December 1st. 2017. Thank you, Chair.
I think the sentiments here that they want to finalize this matter whilst you are still in this committee, in case you are taken to another committee, because all parties reshuffle us at some stage. That's on a lighter note. But members, if I'm listening...
There's a hand, Chair. I'm not sure. You might take it personal. He has been lifting the hand. The member has been lifting the hand, but he looks like this. You know, and I said he's new in the committee.
No, no, it is because I don't know that he was part of the committee. He did not indicate to me. Sorry about that, Honorable Member. Can you introduce yourself, Honorable Member? Sorry about that.
Thank you very much. I'm almost 5 months now here. And when I came here, you know, there was a communique to the committee that I'll be joining this committee. So I'm sorry if you don't have that information. However, I am Xolani Ngwezi from the IFP. When Ngwang was redeployed, then I joined Parliament at that time. Chair,
welcome.
Before you make the, let's start with the war part, then we'll continue. Ne? No, it's fine. No, you started this with a war to say you don't understand why we don't know you. So let's correct that. There's no need to wage any war. Remember, you are an alternate member. That is why your party is an alternate in the committee. When the other members are not here, when EFF or COPE is not here, that is why we did not ask who is seated next to Honorable Khaula. Unfortunately, you have not conversed with us in the committee for us to know that this is really Mr. Ngozi. You are welcome to the committee. I just wanted to do that formal part. And also, we just want to apologize so that you don't get offended. We are not overlooking you. It's just that even during the era of the previous chair, you were never formally introduced to the committee. So relax, no hard feelings, we are a family. You can make your input then, Honorable Member.
No, Chair. Actually, there was no war part of it, except to give an explanation. However, Chair, I'm pleased by the proposal from Honorable Skalvik that at least we deal with the matter before December. Because I see some deliberations from colleagues. If you have never been, you know, directly, you know, in this system of labor broking, you know, you may tend to defend it, however, but I know it myself. I've been the victim of this. Until when I left after studying for education, you know. So the cry outside there is not only the demonstrations that we see. Some of those things are very, very personal, you know, Chair. So I'm very glad. In fact, I second the proposal made by Honorable Skalkvig there that we deal with the matter before we close for December. Thank you.
Thank you. If I can summarize the deliberation, the majority view here is saying, let's afford an opportunity for this matter to go back and be discussed by the various parties. The Department of Labor also should be forwarded this for them to respond, so as to guide our debate when we take the matter forward. I want to include another one to say, whilst we are referring it to the Department of Labor, legal services from Parliament should also guide us, because it has implications of tampering with existing pieces of legislation. Then I just want to check with us, are we shelving it for next committee meeting, or are we giving it 2 weeks? That's the only area I need guidance from members. Will parties be ready next week, or we want the ACE to further debate this matter? Honorable Khawula, Honorable Bagram, Honorable Tongwana.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just for consultation purposes, I will request that perhaps let's give it 2 weeks. Then let's keep the following week, and then that week I think we'll have addressed our own caucuses and also the department. At that time we'll be ready. Thank you very much.
Honorable Bagram, Honorable Tongwana, Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what you want to discuss in 2 weeks, but if you're wanting to discuss the possibility of banning labour broking and outsourcing, yes, you would have to change the Constitution, the Labour Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. I can think of many other, all the constitutions of all the bargaining councils will have to be changed. I can go through, I think it's in my head, I think I can name 11 pieces of labour legislation that have to be changed. We went through a rather extensive change to the Labour Relations Act 4 years ago. We've just recently been through an extensive debate and period of time changing the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. That has taken a couple of years, I think about 6 or 7 years to get that all through. But if we want to embark upon that journey, I think 2 weeks might be sufficient. For that, not only would we be consulting with the Department of Labour, but I think the business organisations need input. I can imagine that, like we went through, it's got to go through NEDLAC. So there's got to be a whole lot of discussions on this. But yes, I'm sure in 2 weeks I don't think I'm going to change my mind. I don't think my party will change its mind. And I think we can avoid another 6 years worth of debate on this, but so be it. Thanks.
Honorable Thomas.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I think at the end of the day it will depend on what the majority says. But I wanted to say, in order to afford everybody enough chance, let's debate this after 2 weeks.
Honorable America.
Madam Chair, I really don't know what is expected of this committee in relation to that particular paragraph. Is this committee going to say at the end of the day, when you come back in 2 weeks' time, yeah, we support that labour brokers should be banned, that outsourcing should be banned, and let's put the process in motion as to how we're going to effect it? And that's my fundamental question. And we can come back next week. We don't have to go consult our caucuses. Our position is clear as to how we need to deal with creating an environment for economic growth and employment. The minister earlier in this year briefed us on a basket of legislative changes to the labor relations regime to facilitate economic growth and employment creation. That still needs to be finalized in NEDLAC. Now, we need to respond to a paragraph here in the memorandum that either we agree or we disagree. I mean, it's not going to serve its purpose. So my point is that I don't know what the Deputy Speaker requires of this committee in relation to that, because it's simply just not a yes or a no answer. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the problem lies with the language that's a barrier to some of us, and interpretation differs from person to person. But I would like to support you on the proposal that you've made to seek clarity or advice from our legal services also, in terms of paving a way forward on how to deal with this matter after we receive the response from Labour and also our individual parties' responses. Thank you, Chair.
Can I intervene before I'm noting your hand, Honorable Baker? Honorable members, we were given a memorandum by the Deputy Speaker because we are deemed to be a committee that can be in a better position to give advice on the response to be given by Parliament to COSATU on labour broking and the use of consultants. As a committee, we are saying we can't look at the matter at face value and say this is how you are supposed to respond. Department of Labour, come with your view. Legal Services of Parliament, come with your view, which will equip the committee with information for it to find space to see how to take the matter forward. That is what we are going to discuss in 2 weeks. And that is why we are going back to parties, because when we table this matter, here you have about 6 ANC members. You have 2 members from the DA. You have a member from EFF. You have a member from IFP. I'm just mentioning the parties that are here. It cannot be correct then that when we debate this, each of us comes with a personal view. What we share here should be a view known by our parties, so that when we are deliberating on this matter, we find closure without having prolonged it for long. If then it warrants changes in pieces of legislation, then the Legal Services of Parliament are supposed to chip in, because we are requesting them to be here so that if a decision of this committee is to say COSATU is having a legitimate demand here in their memorandum, we are saying labor brokers should be banned, then Legal Services should come with the how. If this committee decides that we cannot ban labor brokers because of reasons that will be tabled, Legal Services should be saying a better way so that we don't subject Parliament to litigation is this way. That is what is going to happen in 2 weeks. Honorable Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you recall, but approximately 2.5 years ago, a similar demand was made by COSATU. It was sent through to the Department of Labour. It landed up in the Minister's office. It then was fed back to us, exactly the same, to ban labour brokers. No difference. I'll try and dig it out. I'll find it. It was about 2.5 years ago. The Minister then came up with an idea through Ned Lack to have the 3-month clause. That has just been passed by our legislation a year ago. We've now had 3 court cases on it, and in fact it's on appeal at the moment to the Constitutional Court on labour brokers and the 3 months and who is the employer and whatever. Exactly the same thing. But we can keep doing this every 3 years, and it's maybe a good idea to keep doing it every 3 years, because we have nothing else to discuss. We don't have, China I see is now down to 3% unemployment. So Africa, we're approximately at 40% unemployment, although if you follow the COSATU figures, it's at 50% unemployment. But China has never banned labour brokers or outsourcing for one good reason, and the good reason being that it creates almost 30% of the employment base. However, I'm not a great fan of China, so maybe they're wrong, and maybe 3% is wrong, and we should be at 40% unemployment. But I think we're actually wasting our time, our valuable time, on discussing that. But, okay, we go with majority. We're all Democrats here. It happens to be the only form of government we know. And we can debate this again. I don't think the COSATU is going to go away. If we say, well, there's nothing much more we can do other than what the Minister has just passed and put in together, well, we'll keep debating it every 3 years, and maybe that's what they want, to keep us debating about the improvement of the lot of those that are unemployed is not on the agenda at all. The real minimum wage in this country is naught. So I'm very much against the whole debate in the first place, but it looks like Mr. America and I are the only two who are against such a debate, so thank you for that. Thank you.
Can I appeal to you? I've noted your hand, Honorable Khawula. For now, it's only one party that is ready with responses, and we don't dispute that. But other parties are not ready. So let's afford the parties that are not ready to go and consult. Honorable Khawula.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I was also going to make the same point, that our colleagues must respect the wisdom of all of us. If they've made up their mind, they must also accept that we have a responsibility as representatives of the constituents and people, that we must do our own consultation and provide our own views on the matters. So I think part of what is required as Democrats is the ability to be persuaded and persuade people. If COSATU thinks that it can persuade this portfolio committee and parliament into what they think, it's a legitimate right. And unfortunately, our duty is to listen and consider and apply our own wisdom based on the representation we have. So there is no way we can come here and hold our own long-standing ideological perspective on issues and then seek to hold other parties into ransom. That it's useless to think about it, because we are legislators, we make laws. So the very same laws you're referring to in terms of the implications it will have to the Constitution will still be charged by Constitution to consider. What are we going to do with constitutional implications of banning the labor brokers if we come to that breach? And at least now, we have not even said that we agree with COSATU. We're just saying that give us a chance, because it's our own political responsibility to check what our own constituency will say. So please respect your caucus and respect our caucus. Let your caucus refresh your mandate if it needs to, and so is ours, will do that. Thank you very much. Speaker, I think we are on point in terms of your summary.
Yo, Chapati. Hey. This is happening, man. Confusing us.
Honorable Sankavik, I will tell the speaker you love her so dearly. Every lady you see, you shall say, speaker.
Honorable Sankavik. Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to make mention, Chairperson, that Honorable Bagrin raised the concern that there's several litigations in terms of the current matter, this matter that's that we are discussing now. But I think this shouldn't allow us not to deal with the matter, because we haven't reached any conclusion. We don't know what other parties are thinking. We don't know what will be deliberated on and how we would conclude on the matter. So I don't think at this point we can raise the sub judice law at this stage, and we need to delve into the matter before we raise that concern. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, members. I think it was just a matter of raising concerns, but I think there's consensus on our approach in dealing with the matter. I just want to remind members that today we are supposed to be dealing with the labor activation program, but because of the non-availability of the DJ, we changed to the FEE. That has impacted on the program. I just want the secretary to rehash the impact thereof. We have not included a new item, but just shifting items that were in the program we adopted. Mr. Saga.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and I will just go directly to the affected dates. As Chairperson has already alluded, the first one was today, which we had SEE instead of the Labor Activation Program. So in the following week, which is the 1st of November, we're going to have now the investigations conducted during oversight visits in 2017, which was later in the program that was adopted. And then on the following week, Wednesday, 8 November, it will be the Essential Services Committee of the CCMA that will be coming, And also, since it will be the end of the 2 weeks which was given for the submissions on the clause of the Labor Laws Amendment Bill, we are also going to have that Labor Laws Amendment Bill back on the program on the 8th, because the 2 weeks end actually on the 31st of October. That is the 8th of November. Then on the 22nd of November, another change there is that the labor activation, which was supposed to be there today, is now moved to the 22nd of November. And lastly, the 29th of November will be the second quarterly performance of the department. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Member, that was just for noting. I don't think there's anything to discuss. Honorable Baker.
If it was just for noting, we've just left out what we spent the last half an hour discussing.
We did not leave it out. Remember, Zolani was presenting what he brought to this house. Decisions of this meeting are going to be effected because they are going, it's going to be captured in our minutes, and automatically he'll have to go and effect it in our program. So everything is on board. In 2 weeks' time, you'll find that item on the agenda. Yes. Honorable Franz Kaffee. Then that takes us to an unnumbered item, which is usually not the competence of the chair. I'll ask somebody who has guts enough to take us to that item. Honorable Tongwane.
Thank you, Chair. I propose closure.
Closure proposed. Anyone who seconds that? Honorable Khawula. I could see your faces. Everybody will say, oh no. Thank you, members. The meeting has come to an end.
Which one? Which item are you comfortable with? Let's hope we'll convince you on another one.
I think we need to speak to 9.3 million people.
And this court case is against this last month.